This episode of Commentary, Trek Stars, is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 4, Episode 10 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today is the start of a new series that we're doing on Will Wheaton, who I believe is our first actor to be covered.
That's so right.
But we're not going to be talking about his acting, per se. We're going to be talking about his work as a television show host, I guess.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at his two shows, the first being Tabletop and the second being The Will Wheaton Project. But today we're going to start it off by looking at his work on Star Trek. So Wheaton obviously played Wesley Crusher for about 3.5 seasons on Next Generation. He came back for a couple of episodes in Season 5, a couple in Season 7, and he was also in Nemesis. He was also the voice of the Romulans in Star Trek 09.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about Will Wheaton in Star Trek in general?
Well, I don't really know. Like, I've always been a big Wesley fan.
Mm-hmm.
And when my friend started bad-mouthing Wesley, I realized that, like, I really liked the presence of that character. I really liked the way that the that there was, like, a younger person involved, and it made it seem a little bit more relatable. The environment's pretty difficult to connect to, but seeing how Wesley was able to, you know, maneuver into that the bridge environment and the missions and save the day, that made it like sort of like a connection point, and I was always really excited about that. And for a long time, I didn't really think about Will Wheaton outside of the character of Wesley. And I mean, that's just normal for actors and, you know, kids watching things. Eventually, you go, "Oh, there's actually a person that plays that person," and I didn't know anything about him until a bunch of years later when he started being a more significant or more often appearing online personality. And I was very surprised to find out that the guy who played the character that I idolized as a child became somebody who just seemed really cool and fun and likable and interesting. I was very excited about that. But that's a 2-decade path.
Right, yeah. I mean, it is true. You know, when thinking about this episode, like, it was hard for me to, when I was preparing it, like, I was like, well, we can talk about this and this and this. And then I sort of realized that it wasn't really so much about Will Wheaton as it was about Wesley Crusher, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess that's kind of natural for any actor in the Star Trek universe. It's just sort of the way it works. But in an effort to kind of, like, fight against that, just looking at him and his performance over the course of the series, you know, I've always liked Will Wheaton and Wesley Crusher as a character. He was a little weak early on, you know, in Season 1. He was a little kid, essentially, you know?
Well,
and
Season 1, everyone was a little weak.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, and he hadn't really done much stuff, and you can tell that He did feel kind of like a child actor in a sense, you know. He hadn't quite honed his craft yet. And
I don't really get that.
There's some stuff which is just so over the top, you know, and part of it is the writing for sure, but some of it's like, gee, willikers, Captain, let's do this, it'll be fun, you know, and just some of his react, it's just a little too over the top, you know. And you can kind of see, like yesterday, just to sort of prepare for this, I watched three episodes. I watched Where No One Has Gone Before, The Game, and Journey's End. And you can kind of see his progression as an actor over the course of those three episodes. And
do you include Stand By Me in this history of him as an actor?
Well, I don't, because I've only seen Stand By Me once when I was like 9 years old, which was before I had seen any Star Trek. So I really don't know what his performance in that was like.
That was weird.
But just talking about it in terms of Star Trek, you know, I mean, you can definitely see him getting better as he ages, which only makes sense. But like, if you look at him in those episodes where he returns after he had left the show, he's really strong in those. You know, he stands up to anyone else in the cast, really.
I agree with that. But like, in Journey's End, when I first watched that, I thought like, why is he forgotten how to act? Why is he coming off so fake and phony? And like, it took me a while to realize it was just like, he was talking like no one on Star Trek ever has. He was being petulant. Mm-hmm. And like, you never see that. Like, it seemed insane to me that he was acting this way. I don't know, like, if there's an equivalent. It's just like an incredibly strange moment in like an otherwise relatively consistent show.
Well, even now I feel uncomfortable, but I remember, you know, at the time watching it when I was a kid, you know, whenever Wesley would come back for anything, it was like, ooh, Wesley's back. This is cool. You know, even like in Parallels, where he's in like a couple shots, that was when it was super cool. It was like, wow, they got him back for like two shots or whatever, just to be like a background dude. That's so cool. And then, you know, he's back in Journey's End, and, you know, going to the conventions and everything, kind of had an idea that this was coming up. And you see him, and he's just a total jerk. Like, he's such a jerk that he makes you feel bad for Geordi. Because Geordi's the biggest jerk of them all.
You've got to stop hating on Geordi.
And he puts Geordi in his place, and part of you is like, you know, way to go, Wesley. He had it coming.
I don't get this.
Karma's a bitch. But another part of me, you know, a much bigger part of me, especially back then, was like, Wesley, what happened? You know, I kind of felt the same way that everyone else felt on the show, which is like
the way Picard got really concerned about him, and he's like, Wesley, come on, talk to me. Tell me what's going on. And he's like, I don't want to, jerk. You're not my dad.
Right. And that scene,
I can do what I want to do.
That scene in Engineering where he's putting down Geordi is just brutal, you know? It's just like,
Give him a taste of his own medicine. This is what you did to Scotty, jerk.
Yep.
No, that's crazy.
But it just, I mean, that episode so is like really well done, because it really does capture that feeling, you know.
Well,
the awkwardness, the everything.
Journey's End is a great episode, and I every time I've watched through the entire series, I notice new things. And the most recent time I noticed that Journey's End has 1,000 different ridiculous things in it, and they all seem plausible.
Yeah. But that evolution, you know, I think, the thing about that episode and his performance in it is it shows, you know, sort of like a maturity as a performer. And it kind of makes me want to see him do more stuff, even though I know his career has kind of changed since then.
Well, you know, I mean, like, I'm not really a big fan of, like, you know, the presence of actors. Like, no matter how much I like an actor, I'm not really longing for them to do more acting.
Well, I mean, whatever.
Yeah. When Will Wheaton started doing cool things, you know, like, writing and doing, like, early on, it was just a blog at some point, and that was where I was most surprised to learn that I really don't care about, like, the acting side of his career. I think that he's much better as a person. I want to hear him talk as himself. I don't want him to pretend to be somebody else, because, I mean, like, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's not going to be as interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But at the same time, I can see, like, maybe it's sort of like the reverse of that, where it's not like, I want to see him acting in things. It's more like, if there's a show that I want to see or a movie that I want to see, and then they're like, or maybe one that I'm on the fence about, and then they're like, well, you know, we got Will Wheaton in it. I'd be like, ooh, well, that's interesting. Let me check that out then, because I'm curious to see what that's going to be, you know. But regardless. All right. Okay, so what about the character of Wesley? I know that we've touched on this a little bit, but what are your thoughts on the character in general?
Well, before I had to start defending the character, essentially I thought of him as basically a kind of a protagonist, because I could never really relate to, like, Picard's life. I don't understand how he, you know, woke up in the morning and did his job. Like, that's just, it seemed weird to me. His life was too bizarre. But Wesley's life made a kind of sense. He went to school, and he really wanted to do things that were not school. He wanted to do the real stuff. It was very, very relatable. I was always a big fan of the idea of having that character on the show. And when he left, it was sort of weird, because it was like that was part of the DNA to me, like the idea that there's a character who sort of sees this world from a younger perspective, and but not like from a dumb perspective, from essentially an immature perspective. And that seems sort of crucial. Like, it was like the sort of the missing piece of Star Trek, like a different point of view than the main characters, who all tend to kind of share the same worldview, even if they have different interpretations of it. I mean, even no matter what, like Kirk and Spock and Bones, they are more alike than they are to, like, a character like Wesley. So I was really excited that there was that presence on the show. And and when I watch the show now, like, whenever I you know, rewatch some episodes, I always sort of like rediscover, like, they really did his character well. And the backlash was really, I think, some sort of weird, like rejection of the idea that, like, this character is obviously pretty great. Like, he's not flawed enough to be celebrated.
It's weird. You know, I come at it from a slightly different perspective, in that I did not start watching Star Trek until halfway through season 6 of Next Generation. So by that time, Wesley was already gone. And I was watching the reruns primarily, but the whole time I knew going into the show that Wesley was not on the show anymore. And I was aware of this fan reaction to him. And I could kind of see it. When you look at sort of like the way that he's portrayed in, well, season 1 in particular. But I was also at that point seeing things like First Duty and Final Mission. I really enjoyed the way that character was handled in those episodes. Now, like, looking back at it, one of the things that I think I really did respond to was kind of what you were saying, in that, you know, he was relatable. You know, there is a thing that is done in storytelling, and I'm not necessarily sure if that was intended with Wesley, but, you know, the Robin thing, where they introduce the character of Robin in order to give these young readers sort of a character with a similar point of view.
Well, I mean, like, the young character, I mean, you could say Robin, but in a sense, like, it's not really fundamentally different than, like, the audience's Avatar character. Like,
well, yeah.
Functionally, they're identical to, like, Dr. Watson.
Yeah.
Like, they're essentially just the way that the audience can connect to the story, because, like, sometimes you do need, an emissary to introduce you to these characters, because they're kind of weird, especially when you're dealing with science fiction or fantasy or some sort of bizarre, like, mental freak like Sherlock Holmes. You need a way in.
Yeah, and that's what Robin was intended to be. That's very well documented. I don't necessarily think that's what Wesley was intended to be, but that ended up being what Wesley was for me, because while I wasn't as old as Wesley, I was almost. You know, I was like 13 years old when I started watching the show, and a lot of the things that he was going through on a personal level were things that I was going through, you know? And I wanted to see that character succeed because, you know, I could see myself in him, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm convinced that, you know, to this day, one of the reasons why I love The Game, which I do love, that's my favorite Wesley episode, is
really?
Because...
That's just awful.
I love that episode. And I think, like, one of the reasons is because, you know, probably, like, looking at the time period and everything, like, Ashley Judd was probably my one of my first crushes, you
really?
Know, in terms of TV and stuff like that, wow, and like in a serious way, and to see, you know, this kid who I could relate to on the show more than anyone else, you know, succeed romantically with Ashley Judd was exciting.
So word you're looking for a score.
Regardless, it was, you know, so it's like that kind of thing, you know, that type of thing made me relate to that character in a way that I couldn't relate to the other characters. And
so he was an aspirational character as well as an avatar character.
Well, no, he was, because I mean, look at him. He was very successful in what he was trying to do. He was a very smart kid and everything like that. And, you know,
yeah, there's a part of me that thinks that maybe the whole, he's like a super genius plot element was a way of explaining why they would let him on the bridge.
Maybe,
like, it was essentially secondary to him being a kid.
Well, maybe, but see, that is a thing which I was thinking about a lot in preparing for this, and I rewatched very specifically Where No One Has Gone Before and Journey's End last night to kind of test this theory, which I'm sure everyone else has already thought of. I just had never thought of it myself, really. But
what is this theory?
One of the big complaints about Wesley is that he always saves the day. You know, they have the chart. How many times does Wesley save the day? And, you know, it goes... It's way, way more times than any other character and all this other stuff.
Most of that, I think, is nonsense. But The Naked Now, they have a good point. That is stupid.
There are times. There are times when it's stupid and everything like that. However...
But that's just because the whole episode's garbage.
However, if you go back and you look at Where No One Has Gone Before... I kind of see that episode now as being sort of like the Rosetta Stone for understanding the character of Wesley and understanding why he was the guy who's always saving the day and everything like that. It's because he really was working on another level. He was the smartest guy in the room by, like, exponential numbers. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like...
Well, there are clearly points where his different way of seeing things, his sort of like bizarrely, you know, abstract, elevated, like, consciousness made him wrong about things, which is really, really hard to get to work in drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I buy it very quickly in this context, and I think it's mainly just because it's Star Trek and all the writers were nerds when they were kids, and they all know what it's like to be slightly too smart for your own good.
See, I think the problem with it is that they put this little seed in there in, like, what was it, like the sixth or seventh episode of the show, right? And that's what gets him onto the bridge and everything like that. But, I mean, that episode, you know, the Traveler drops a huge bomb where he's like, this dude is special in a way that, you know, is something which is basically... never been seen before.
And
you need to nurture this and make sure that he grows into basically the next stage of humanity. I mean, Wesley is the space baby from 2001, in a sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's the star child.
The star child. And when they came back to that at the end of the show, Journey's End... First off, the fact that they came back to that and they finished up that storyline, I think, was really, really bold, but also really, really awesome. And
it is pretty great. I mean, it's one of those rare instances where, like, they did the "we'll come back to this later" thing, and then they did.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Thomas Riker, who's still in jail.
Whatever, but he's in jail. He's in jail. That's fine. But this was, you know, because he was a main character on the show and everything like that. It's like you needed to finish up on that thing, and that's something that they never do on Star Trek, really. And when I first saw Where No One Has Gone Before, I really didn't care about it, and I didn't think I could really comprehend what was going on. And when I saw Journey's End, I think I had pretty much the same reaction. I enjoyed the episode, but at the same time, you know, I'm like, what? Now Wesley's like a god or something? He's not even in the same realm of existence. Wait, how does this work? This doesn't... And to me, at the time, I just checked out because I'm like, now you're going too far. Now you're going into the realm of magic, and I can't deal with this. You know,
I do that a lot.
I can't process this, but not with a main character, you know, aside from Deep Space Nine, but that hadn't aired yet.
Well, I mean, like, Star Trek for a while had been flirting with this idea of, like, the next step after Star Trek times.
Mm-hmm.
The next step being, like, an order of magnitude weirder.
But you don't see it.
No, but it was there, and it was actually getting closer. Like, the thread of, like humanity ascending to another level is very present in TNG from beginning to end.
Maybe, but at the same time, I'm just like, okay, that's an interesting concept. But, you know, humans can't do that. And when you see Wesley do that, I'm like, no. And I think part of me, you know, again, being at that time probably 14 years old, was like...
The idea that humans can't get, that's kind of a philosophical concept. No, you're just like lobbing it out there.
I'm like, now I can't, you know, relate to this character as much as I did before. And stuff like that. But watching it again now, you know, and really thinking about it and looking at it from a new perspective and one, you know, which has had, you know, a lot more sci-fi to process and also, you know, just sort of philosophically a lot more stuff to process. Like, I really kind of love it. I love what they did in Where No One Has Gone Before, and I love how they finish it off in Journey's End. And I think that it's one of the coolest things that they've done in the whole franchise. It may not be the best episode, but it's one of the coolest concepts which they paid off. And it kind of makes me love Wesley Crusher even more than I had. And it also does, I think, in a lot of ways, explain why he was the guy saving the day all the time back in season one. It's just that you don't You think of that as an episode, and then they don't mention it again or anything like that, and because of that, you just forget about it. And whether or not that's intentional, I mean, that's
what I
see as it.
I did not forget about it. I was counting the days until they got back to it.
See, I think most people... I was frustrated
that they didn't go back to it a lot sooner.
I think most people forgot about it, you know? I really do.
Well, I think, like, the this element, this Star Trek element that actually started around the original series and kept going, and it didn't really, like, vanish from Star Trek entirely until after Next Generation ended. But the idea that the next step in human evolution is radically different, and very specifically the idea that reality is in some way based on abstraction,
mm-hmm.
is a very... weird new agey concept that I believe Gene Roddenberry encountered at some point during the original series run and tried to incorporate into the series. And somewhere along the line, other people just stopped carrying it. Like, they let the baton fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, because I think that the idea that Star Trek might actually, like, graduate and become a different thing is very exciting. And I'm sort of routinely frustrated by franchises that refuse to change or grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Trek actually had the recipe there. It had the information. There was a set of instructions in Next Generation on how to do this new thing. And all you got to do is follow up on it. And nobody did, because that would mean changing the show and possibly losing viewers.
Yeah.
And that's stupid.
Yeah. It's a big change. I mean...
Yeah, whatever. So what? In terms of, like, changes... I would rather they make a potentially bad show that is attempting to do something radically new than doing something that would obviously work dramatically and that would definitely be successful.
I mean, I agree with you, but I can also see, you know, the other side of it, which is...
The business side?
The business
side.
Screw
them. Who cares about them?
But then also I can see the side of, you know, sort of like the creative side, which is like, well, that's an interesting concept, and that's what you can do, and that's not what I'm doing here. I want to do, you know, stories that are in this, you know, already established setup, you know, which I can see as being perfectly valid, too. But
mental tier?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that there's necessarily anything, you know, mutually exclusive about one or the other. I don't see any reason why you can't do both. Like, you know what? There was even a little bit of an Voyager. There was even a little bit of an Voyager. There was Kes.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of flirted with the idea. But then they, you know, decided to not do that and just made her a space carry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what her name should have been. Neelix and Space Carry.
So what are some of your favorite Wesley Crusher episodes? Any that stand out to you as high points?
Well, it's sort of difficult because early on, like, basically I would be excited by Wesley's presence on the screen. So it's a little difficult to separate my excitement over the character's presence from the quality of the episode, or the quality of the character's role in the episode. But I suppose The First Duty is probably my favorite Wesley episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly just because it's a crazy, like, it's surprising how well established Starfleet Academy is in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm very impressed with that. There's just a ton in that episode that's really cool, and it's very universe expandy, and it certainly helps make more sense of Starfleet Academy at that point, which at that point it seemed kind of like it was designed by Kafka with all kinds of crazy head games and bizarre challenges that are not explained in any way. It seemed very weird, and seeing that they actually had, you know, group assignments and field trips, that made it much more believable. So yeah, I really like The First Duty, and I mean obviously, like, the dramatic side of it is fantastic because it's really great seeing a character like Wesley, who's always been the smartest guy in the room, in a room full of people who are the smartest people in the room all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Yeah, I like The First Duty a lot too. You know, for a lot of the reasons that you're saying, anytime that they sort of got out of the Enterprise and looked at other aspects of the Federation or Starfleet or whatever, and you could see how that society functions, especially things that you hear about on, you know, almost a weekly basis but never see. You know, that's really cool. But I also did think that it was a really good story. And it was also, you know, cool that, you know, they were returning to the character of Wesley and also returning to Earth. It was exciting, you know?
Yeah. It's actually just all around a really good episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any problems with that episode. And that's not common, unless it's season 6.
Yeah. For me, like I was saying, I think my favorite episode is The Game. It's a lot of fun, you know?
I hate The Game so much.
it's a lot of fun. I really do enjoy it. And a big part of that has to do with the chemistry between Will Wheaton and Ashley Judd. They really do kind of sell that episode for me. But yeah, that's my favorite. I know everyone hates it. I don't understand it. Not everyone used to hate it, because the first time I saw it was part of the Viewer's Choice Marathon on WPWR Power 50. I think it was number 6. Or so. Maybe number 5, actually.
I mean, I can tell you why I hate it. It's totally silly. This terrible game is introduced, and people try it, and they instantly love it because of how it makes them feel, and no one thinks, I should probably break this.
It is kind of weird. I mean, like, I don't know how they thought that this plan could actually work, you know, and extend past this ship, because you're going to have someone like Wesley on there who's going to be like, no.
I was very happy to see, like, Data's off switch
mm-hmm.
coming up again, because it's like, that's continuity.
Yeah.
He told his mom about that, Crusher about that a long time ago, and Wesley must have learned it from her, which, come to think of it, why would she tell him?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems kind of like a violation of doctor-patient confidentiality.
But the
she should go to jail.
But the whole thing where, like,
where Thomas Riker is.
But the whole thing where, like, you know, they're sitting in 10 forward talking about the game, and they're like, oh, we should try it. Well, I want to know a little bit more about it first. Right. Oh, well, let's set up a simulation in engineering. And it's like, really? No, you wouldn't do that. You just try out, you know, Super Mario Brothers and see whether or not it's any good. And then, you know what I mean? I don't think that, but whatever.
So your argument is that if everyone around you is smoking crack, then you're like, I don't get why everyone's suddenly smoking crack. Let's just try it to see if it's any good.
But they weren't, they didn't have any suspicions about it being anything other than a video game, essentially.
But it was very weird. Yeah, they were very clearly concerned about how quickly it spread.
They weren't concerned about it. They just thought it was weird at that point. They were like, yeah, I'm going to get around to it. I'm going to try it. I'm kind of wondering why, but, you know, it's like not a bit. Well, let's do this thing. Okay, yeah.
So you're arguing that their urgency was not apparent enough?
It was very wishy-washy in terms of about whether or not they were just too busy to try the game or whether or not they were concerned about side effects. You know what I mean?
I suppose. I think that's a weird hair to split.
Well, no, I don't think that it is. I think you need to really come down on one side or another in order to sort of be like, well, let's try the game, or
but you don't
do some tests on it.
You don't need to have a conscious thought about that, like, is formed in the sense of, like, it does. You don't have to have a conscious thought that includes the word dangerous in order to be wary of something that you don't understand.
I agree, but at the same time, I don't really see them, you know, like, I can see them easily on the way to 10-4, or on the way to engineering, being like, you know what, I'm going to just try this game while we're in the turbo lift. Because why not?
And the other one goes,
I know he does say,
because
he does say, I want to know how it works first. You know, Wesley says that. I'd like to know more about how it works first, but I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But on the whole, I do like that episode. I also, it's one of the few times, one of the only times, I think, maybe the only time, where you see, like, Riker just flat out with some random woman, like, in a hotel room, just, you know?
Well, yeah, usually we see the first scene.
Where he's like,
and we don't, you know, see the later scene.
He's like, hey. But here, I mean, this was like, you know, they were hanging out in the hotel room, you know? And that scene is pretty risque for Star Trek, The Next Generation. I mean, that show is so chaste.
Austere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't stand. I can't stand the really quick, like, sexual storylines that pop up on a regular basis, and the idea that Riker is just always down to nail everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like it gets annoying until Data's Day, where it's a little bit. No, it's not Data's Day. What is it? Anyway, the one where he dates the crew member. Where Data dates, and he goes to Riker, and he's like, you should do it. You should definitely do it. She's hot. I would. If you don't, I will. Just FYI, Data.
Yeah.
See you later on today.
Yeah.
I like that moment. But I do not like Riker's sexual obsessions.
See,
they're a little
me,
tedious.
To me, it's like you never actually see it. You never see anything. You never even see him, like, in a relationship or anything like that. So because of that, it's kind of weird. It's always just them saying, like, oh, Riker, he has a reputation. Oh, yeah, he's got a reputation.
Yeah.
He does it all the time. And it's like, well, you never see him with anyone, really. Like, occasionally he'll be, like, in 10 forward having drinks with someone or something like that. But
well,
it's just weird, just the way that it's done.
I don't know, man. I can count the number of times, like, Riker hooked up with somebody in the course of one episode.
Okay.
Well, and I mean, remember with the, what was it, the Bring Lady? Is that what it was? With the up the long ladder?
Yeah, there was that episode. All right. Well, one last thing that we should probably just mention is, you know, the fact that Will Wheaton, it was revealed after the fact, did the voices of the Romulans in Star Trek 09. He did the ADR for all those guys.
All of the non-Neros.
Yeah, Nero and Clifton Collins Jr.'s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I thought that was kind of a cool little thing. And sort of a nod to the fans, but then also to me, it's one of those things where what that said to me more than anything was like JJ and Will Wheaton sort of operate on the same wavelength. You know, they're sort of like, hey, you know, like that. I can see the two of them hanging out, and then also it's one of those things where, along with his comments about Nemesis, it shows to me. And this is pre, you know, a lot of his other stuff. It shows to me that Will Wheaton is like a fan of this stuff. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that you hear a lot and he talks about. And it's like, he's a nerd too. You know, he likes all of these things. And
that was actually the thing that really, really, like, really made me happy when I discovered that, because I thought, like, he's just an actor.
Right, right. It's like, he's not just an actor. He's one of us.
Yeah, that was very exciting.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the next thing, I just to point out that the episode where Q Riker turns Wesley Crusher into a grown-up, and the grown-up is some tall blonde dude.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that doesn't really work out too well.
I cannot believe that as a child I did not react to that like, what? What the? Really? Riker, you dropped the ball. That's some other adult person. Obviously, you looked up the wrong human body in adulthood, and like, but like, somehow I didn't think that as a kid. Looking at it now, I'm like, that would not, that does not make sense. How did I not realize that that was ridiculous when I was 10 years old? Because it is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was the 80s. You know, what could you do?
Back in the 80s, where like, when a person grew up to adulthood, they could suddenly be played by anybody.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. Flash forwards on the Wonder Years. Fred Savage's character was played by Avery Brooks.
Yeah.
So another Star Trek connection.
Well, any final thoughts on Will Wheaton's work in Star Trek?
I still want there to be a Wesley series. And I'd be okay with it if it was animated.
All right. Well, maybe one day you'll get your wish. Yeah. For me, I think that he gets a bad reputation, and I think it really stems from the reaction at the time. You know, I don't think that most people watching the show now dislike Wesley as much as people did back when it was airing. And I think if you examine it now, you can see that what they were doing with the character was a lot more sophisticated than it seemed. And he wasn't just a kid for the sake of being a kid. They were actually trying to do something with that character, and I think they did it really well.
I think that it's another symptom of the sort of like the problem of fandom in general, that there's an oddly strict set of parameters for virtually every fandom, and there are like different like stages and camps, and it's in some ways very hierarchical and very sectarian, but the response of fandom along the lines of, no, that's wrong, when the thing being objected to is in fact an attempt to do something new and bigger and deeper and more, is fairly common. I mean, we just did the Benny Russell thing. I think that it's basically an example of the same sort of response, which is like, I don't understand this thing that you're trying to do, so it comes off to me as stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's just another example of it. I mean, like, you say Wesley Crusher is going to... Wesley Crusher has the potential to become a different sort of being. Is a very radically different... It's a very radically weird statement to make in the beginning of a series. And I think a lot of people just rejected it. They just thought, oh, what he means is that he'll be wicked smart.
Right.
And that's not what he's saying. He very clearly isn't saying that, but people interpreted it that way because that is more comfortable, because these are people who've been watching a series for a very long time. And Star Trek at that point was already pretty old.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, sort of set in their ways that Star Trek is a series of TV shows and movies in which people travel in spaceships. And the idea that perhaps the next step doesn't even require spaceships, I think that they rejected it right out of hand because they just did not want to watch that show, because they didn't know what it would be.
Well, it's been fun talking about Wil Wheaton today, but this is just one of the topics we're talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
They're not going to just do something crazy and be like, what if we did Star Trek, but on Earth? What if we did Star Trek, but, you know, with more explosions or whatever? Wouldn't that be cool? And giant robots.
Earl Grey.
Between a combination of Riker's beard and the spandex, you could pretty much identify what season you were watching just by those two markers alone. No beard Riker? Must be season one. Pinstriping in the background, but Riker has a beard? Must be season two.
The Ready Room.
The Prime Directive is there, and all these captains are constantly having to break it because it's obviously such a rigid rule.
Right.
And you can't tell a story with such rigid rules. So you go back to, yeah, it's television, it's drama.
The Orb.
It's never clear, like, is Costa Mojan, is that the name of a person from long ago, or is it the name of a group of people? And so you're saying that in the Prophet's language, Costa Mojan is the name of the Paw race.
Right, that's what they call the Paw race.
To the journey!
Think about how horrible it would be perceived by the audience to see Neelix beaten up ruthlessly.
Some people would really enjoy that.
That's true, I'm talking about normal people with hearts and souls. Okay, so those people...
Commentary, Trek Stars.
This means that really now, sort of, the three of us are responsible for really getting the movie to what it's going to be, and there's a feeling, okay, what the movie we write is the movie that's going to get made, which is a really cool feeling, actually.
Warp 5.
You know, Spock and Tuvok are two Vulcans, and so I feel like if you brought 10 more into the room, to say that they're all going to be the same is really a boring race. It's even right. If they're logical, they shouldn't have the same personalities.
Melodic Treks.
But when J.J. Abrams came on, he was like, just in like casual
T-shirt and jeans.
T-shirt and, yeah, and because he'd just come from the set of
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good excuse.
Continuing mission.
And there's this moment where you pass into it, and you're not only on a TV set, you're on a TV set that is a recreation of the Enterprise, and then that goes away. And then you're on the Enterprise.
Literary Treks.
This is what I expect from the ongoing comics. This is kind of what I think we've wanted, is just to have this crew start to feel like the original series in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune. Or you can stream them from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Hey, we have a new iTunes review.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's from Phasers to Wellsby. He gives...
Is that above kill?
What?
Is that above kill?
I don't know what that means.
Phaser? Never mind.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. No, he left a review on iTunes, or maybe she, I don't know. It's a 5-star review, which is very generous. Thank you very much for that. The subject is hosts who don't always agree. I guess that's us.
Yeah.
They say, I love the detailed look into what else our Star Trek creators have done. I especially appreciate that the hosts do not always agree about the quality or meaning of these other works. The passion with which Mike and Max discuss their views is really fun to listen to. Well, thanks, Phasers. We do really appreciate the feedback. Yeah.
It's always nice to hear that somebody gets it.
You know, I was just watching, just last night, I watched Life Itself, the documentary on Roger Ebert.
I had not seen that.
It's really freaking good. But there's a whole... section in there about his relationship with Gene Siskel, you know, and their dynamic, and how at times they were just flat out, you know, they hated each other. They were at each other's throats, but at the same time, you know, they had like this respect for each other. And the whole time I'm watching that, I'm like, this is pretty much the same dynamic that we have.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But yeah. Thanks again, Phasers. We do really appreciate it. And check out Life Itself, because it's really good. for what it's worth. And if you want to leave us feedback, you know, please do. You know, you can you can go to iTunes and leave a review there. Apparently, that really helps us out in terms of making the show visible.
Yeah, it does others. A thing that's good.
Yeah, you can also email us or go on the forums or Twitter still not know or whatever. How that works? I don't think anyone knows how it works. I think it's just a magical thing that Steve Jobs.
I bet Siri knows how it works.
Maybe we should ask. Yeah.
Like I'll talk to us.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. Audible has something for everyone. And you know, Will Wheaton, he has done a lot of work as a narrator of books.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
In fact, one that he did was a book called Dead Pig Collector, which was written by Warren Ellis.
Yep.
Have you read this book?
No.
Okay.
I haven't. I'm familiar with it, though.
I like Warren Ellis. He's a really good writer. You know, I've read a lot of his comic book stuff, and he's cool. The description. From the wicked imagination of award-winning writer Warren Ellis comes Dead Pig Collector, a love story with a classic Ellis twist. So while it might be a love story, it's also about killing people and disposing of their bodies in the most efficient manner possible. Sounds like fun for the whole family.
Well, that's very responsible. It's not just to leave the bodies out.
Right.
You should do something with them. It's not, it's really bad for the environment, you know?
Yeah.
It's bad. Also, it attracts bugs.
And since you listen to our show, you can get this book for free on audible.com. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek.fm. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help keep commentary, Trek Stars, coming to you each week, and that's by adopting some aliens. Well, illustrations anyway. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original illustrations by Tobo Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on the website. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which you would like and in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. There aren't any traveler badges, but maybe in Wave 2. You never know.
Yeah, there should be a Wesley one.
He's not an alien.
So?
Okay.
He is now.
No, he's not an alien. He's just a different...
He's not a human. Although, what would it be a picture of?
That's probably just Wesley, right?
Well, I mean, he doesn't need a physical body anymore.
Well, whatever.
As it would be neat if it was just empty with a little name tag.
Yes. That'd be cool. Oh, we'll have to suggest that. As always, you can find us right here on Trek.fm, where we do this show. And I also do Standard Orbit with Drew. And you can find us on our own website, CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do Commentary Track Stars Off Topic, where we talk about whatever we want to talk about. This coming Sunday, we're going to be talking about aliens, a few other things here and there. Looking at this week in 1999, discussing Arlington Road and American Pie and all that good stuff. So go over there, commentarytrackstars.com, and check us out. You can also lead us feedback, like Phasers to Wellsby did, at iTunes, or on the forums here on Trek.fm, or you can send us an email at comtrackstars@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter at ComTrackStars.
That's probably the fastest way.
Yeah, that's the fastest way. If you want instant response, hit us up on Twitter. If you want us to read your letter on the air, send us an email. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so that's about it for Will Wheaton's work in Star Trek. We will be back next week with part two in our series, where we're going to look at his first television show hosting effort, Tabletop.